Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, part of the SB Nation Podcast Network. My name is Greg Mahochko. Joining me, as always, he is our founder, fearless leader, and by golly, I think by now we can officially call him the voice of the CornNation Podcast Radio. All the stellar work that he does, John Dam Johnston. Hello, John.
Hi, Greg.
How are you?
Yeah, you know, it's been a rough couple days.
Yeah.
You know, it's not in football or anything. It's just, you know, if I feel good sometimes and then the brain injury part of my life kicks in and I get severe headaches and then everything goes downhill. But I am really good right now to hear your radio guy voice.
Thank you very much. By the way, you want to give your wife the gift that keeps on giving, John?
I don't know what that is in your context.
Give her the gift of your smooth-shaved balls with Manscaped.com.
What the hell?
What?
Dope, man. Dope.
The patented lawnmower 3.0 with the no nick technology, because you don't want to nick your nuts.
Is that a sponsor now? Do we get money for that? Otherwise, yeah. Fuck them.
Yeah, no, totally, all the money. And when you sign up, you'll get something, and then every few months they'll send you a nice little replacement blade and something else, like the crop mop ball wipes. Or the ball toner. It's all in there.
I guess we just started this one out with a zoom, zing, pow.
It's that or Blue Chew, and I figure we've talked about Blue Chew enough. So, anyway, all jokes aside, we have to laugh because it keeps us from crying. But we're going to have some good news in this episode, but first we have to bring in our special guest. He's a CornNation writer. He is one of our really dynamic, I was going to say dynamic duos. I'm pretty sure that's copyrighted. Dynamic tag team of recruiting writers, Akilah Roberts. Welcome back to the Five Heart Podcast. Hmm? And he froze. Right when we go to introduce him, he froze. How does this happen? Let's try. Take two. Akilah, what's going on, man? How's sunny southern Florida?
It's cool, man. It's cool. I mean, it's funny. I went to Nebraska over the weekend for senior day.
Sorry.
When I landed on Tuesday morning back home, and it was like 6 to 8 degrees outside, but like I was so used to like the Nebraska cold, like I was sweating, like it was like super hot.
Well, you know, of the world, Akilo, 68 degrees is pretty moderate, very comfortable. It's only for you Floridians. Where you're like 68 degrees, I need a coat. So
I was sweating when I
can we say,
was that your first trip to Nebraska?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So you got to give us a trip report. What'd you think of the great state of Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska? Did you fly into Omaha? Did you have some runses? Did you talk to a lot of people? Were they friendly? Did they hate your guts? Did they say nasty things about Colorado?
How was the Memorial Day game day experience? I've always heard great things.
I had 83 questions before that.
Yeah, John first.
I'll answer the game day question after I answer John's questions.
Typical.
So yeah, it was cool. I mean, you know, I got there on Thursday afternoon. I flew from Miami to Dallas and Dallas to Omaha. It was cool, you know. It was pretty chilly. People were good. I ate at this place called it's in downtown Lincoln. It's on, I think, 10th and O, or 10th and somewhere around there. It's called the Green Gâteau, G-A-T-E-A-U-O. It's like French inspired. It was pretty good. I ate there twice. I ate there on Friday morning, and then Saturday morning before the game as well. But yeah, besides that, people in Nebraska were nice. It was cool. I was staying on 13th and I was staying on 13th and N in downtown Lincoln. And I was walking from where I was staying to this, every day just to take a picture. So it was cool. You know, I got to walk on hallowed ground, the house that Tom built.
and everybody else since has chipped away.
Oh, wait a minute. You went to the game, didn't you?
Yeah. So all day, and it was so cold, bro. Like the ground, like in between like the bleach and stuff, like the ground was like frozen. Like I was like walking on ice, and like it was like hard. Like I was trying like not to slip. I had to wipe the snow and ice off the seats and like stand up on it because I couldn't stand on the ground because of ice. I'd slip. It was ice cold. People started cheering when because it was cloudy. People started cheering when the sun came out. That was funny. It was really cold. That game, man, that game was ugly. But besides that, I had a good time. Funny, you know, my first time at Memorial Stadium, it was a snowball. But other than that, I had a great time.
A couple of things. The Green Gâteau, 330 South 10th Street in Lincoln. So check them out. They are highly recommended by Coronation Zone, Akilah Roberts. I'm not going to go into their menu. You find that out on your own, greengateau.com.
My God, it's like we're doing sponsors all over the fucking place and we're not even getting paid for this shit. What the hell?
I was curious. Yeah, that comes as a recommendation from one of our own.
Yeah.
It does.
Okay, now shut up. Let me ask my next question. Big Ten Network or Fox FS1 or whoever, you know, whoever was carrying the game, they like to show coming out of commercial breaks. They really loved showing the little bleacher snowmen that were being made. Did you, because you're from South Florida, did you participate in the bleacher snowman making?
Actually, no, I wasn't, but I was throwing a whole lot of snowballs like on the field, in the bleachers, at other people.
So
I was having fun.
That's my next question. Did anybody from the Nebraska staff see you and try to get you into some pads and a jersey to play quarterback?
Man, they, honestly, you know, it's funny. I probably could throw a just as good as, you know. But, no one approached me. I mean, I have good size. I'm 6'1", somewhere around 250, 260. I'm kind of fat. But, yeah.
Yeah. Can you throw a pass accurately more than 10 yards down the field while guys running sideways?
You're built like the NFL version of Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But he's a little taller.
So since you were up there for senior day, I feel like there had to be a special reason. And I don't know the answer to this question, and you can take a powder and refuse to answer said question, because I don't know if a lot of people, and I don't know if we've ever addressed it here on the show, but you have a relation. Since he's wrapping up his career, are you comfortable, or do you want to just let it go?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, no, the Capra Blue is my cousin.
I don't think we ever talked about that on the show.
No, we didn't.
Yeah,
we've always kind of kept that in the background.
Oh, there you go.
To protect the innocent or the guilty.
To protect Aquila.
cool. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, we've danced around it. But that's. I don't know if we ever established a timeline. You've been a Husker fan since long before, you know, D was in Lincoln, right?
Yeah. I became a fan when I was in middle school. That's when Ndamukong Suh was there killing stuff, and Taylor Martinez was there running crazy over everybody. I became a fan of Nebraska then.
Okay. So like,
you know, so how many people attended the game, do you think?
If I had to put it modestly, it was a good amount. I'd probably say like maybe like 5,000 somewhere in that neighborhood.
Wow.
It was mostly on the Nebraska side. Well, Nebraska like family members were, and then on the other side they had Minnesota fans, but there weren't that many.
See, John, you could have gone and taken Rotten Sun.
Nobody would claim me as a family or friends or anything like that, so no.
Well, let's talk.
I mean, I've been in Memorial Stadium when it was empty, but certainly not during the time when anyone was playing football. So that had to be just, I guess for you, I mean, now you have to go back when there's 90,000 people there, and you will have one of the most unique experiences of being one of those people that's been there for, an almost empty stadium and a very, very full stadium. So,
yeah,
I feel like a Nebraska game at Memorial Stadium during the pandemic is kind of like going to a Miami Hurricane game anytime. You know, you're only going to get a few thousand people there.
It really is.
See, well, let's spend, since you were there, you got to see it all in person, and the rest of us plebes got had to watch it on TV. Let's spend a few minutes on the Minnesota game, because there's certainly some much better Nebraska topics to discuss. They did the same thing this game that they did against Illinois. Same side of the field, same play call, nearly similar result. That, you know, swing pass out, you know, to Wandale to start things. I just wanted, like, we have questions. We don't have answers because we're not in the coach's room. I just want to know why. What are they seeing that, you know, and so often you hear that coaches have, you know, the first 10 or 12 or 15 plays, you know, scheduled and mapped out, and they're sticking with that. But why in the hell do you ever start with that? Just why?
The only thing I could think about these days after the game is that Frost wanted to start out Martinez with an easy completion that would at least gain some yardage, and it turned out to not be an easy completion nor gain yardage. So, I think I've spent a lot of time disgusted with this game and answering questions that'll never be answered.
I know, because as we mentioned, John, you did the post game out by the tree, which is still getting a lot of traction on YouTube. We highly encourage people to check it out on YouTube. You did the Yoshi football show. You have discussed, I'm sure you discussed the Minnesota game when you did the post life crisis with Rutgers that dropped yesterday. So you got to be sick about talking about, you know, the Minnesota game. But my thing to your theory, John, about with that play call is you have the goals that you set out to achieve, get him a quick and easy completion and some positive yards. However, I feel like the quickness with which they're trying to pull this play off, Martinez doesn't have an opportunity to get set, so he's just kind of flinging it over there and hoping for the best. And the best case this past Saturday was that Wandale was able to run and jump on the ball for a -9 yard play.
Yeah.
And again, it set the tone.
I mean, it did set the tone of the game. If you remember the previous week against Purdue, I mean, we let them have the ball first. Can we just let the other fucking team have the ball first from now on for the rest of our lives? I don't care. You know, maybe when Frost gets his – I think he'll get his offense going. Like he's saying 40 points a game. I think we will get there, because if you go back and look at the Minnesota game, Kilo, you were able to see this in the stands. There were receivers running all over the field wide open, weren't there?
Yeah, there was. And, like, Adrian didn't hit any of them. His arm is, like, shot. I don't know what number.
Yeah, yeah. There had to be two plays in which if he just hits the receiver at all, we're going to score a touchdown. And, shades of Joe Bosserman, I guess.
An interesting observation from you there, Akilo, is that Adrian's arm was shot. And the other option is Luke, who's not a strong thrower. So when you have your starting quarterback who's not at 100% and he hasn't been at 100% for half the season, and your backup QB is not a strong thrower, what the hell do you do? You know, you don't, you're out of options because, and I know that
there's a magic word right there. There's the answer. You just said it, Greg.
Out.
No.
Oh.
Of. Out of. Option.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say out of toilet paper because we're in the pandemic still. No, the option. Yes. And when you have as many talented runners as Nebraska has, but you still try to force the passing game, you're not playing to. I feel like Mike Riley did this. You know, he came in and he tried to mold, you know, and make something happen that wasn't there. And I know, you know, Mike Riley's a, you know, evil 4-letter word for a lot of reasons in Lincoln and Nebraska fans across the world, but you can't force, you know, a non quarterback to be a quarterback. You have to play with the talent that you have. Now, to Scott Frost's credit, he's trying to bring in that talent. To Scott Frost's detriment is he's not changing with, he's not adapting the game plan to, you know, the situations of the players that he has in front of him.
Go ahead.
No, you know, Mike, let's go into recruiting. It's the future.
Wait, okay, before we go into recruiting, can I say one thing?
Yes.
Only if it's positive. Only if it's positive.
Yeah. I mean, it's positive, I guess. But Greg, before you went off on that tangent, you asked me, Akilah, what do you do when the quarterback plays Seth or whatever? I was going to say, Minnesota did. Minnesota had 33 players missing because of COVID. Yeah, a lot of offensive players missing. Rashad Bateman opted out of the season, one of the best receivers in the Big Ten. So you do what Minnesota did. You run the ball, control the clock. You try to keep it low. You try to score on the ground. You make passes when you have to. You do what Minnesota did. Minnesota, his game plan worked to perfection. Coach Frost, I don't know what he was doing. He was speeding the game up, and it worked right into Peach's Flex hands.
So yeah, Minnesota coming into that game was giving up 6.82 yards per carry on the ground, the worst in the nation, 127th in the nation. The dead last team in the nation. As in, they're not ahead of anybody. That's the meaning of what last is. And we don't do that. We don't run the ball directly at them. We don't run the ball. I don't know. You know, like you said, I've covered this enough.
And the run game was working too.
And the first half, they were without, I think, Barnes was his name. You know, the big stopgap as a linebacker. I know they had
That's from Purdue.
Was it?
Are you talking about us?
No, I thought Minnesota had a guy out for the first half.
No, that was last week against Purdue. Derek Barnes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah. All right. So even better, there was no reason to not, you know, hand the ball off to Dedrick Mills. You know, at some point we have to just push forward. You know, you're only gonna make forward momentum by going forward. You can run, you can have a 15-yard run play, but if you're going from the left hash to the right sideline and then out of bounds because you can't set an edge, then you're going 1 yard. You know, so you have to go forward. And I feel like the backs are there. I think the skills there to move the ball, you know, to run downfield. But I don't know if the coaching staff doesn't trust the players or what. But it's disappointing.
I think pretty much the only explanation I can give for this is this: Scott Frost knows he has time. In other words, he's not in a 3-year window to start winning football games right away. So he's going to run his offense the way he wants and finds the players that are going to run the offense that he wants. We know that the offense has been the problem here with winning games because they're just not scoring points. So I mean, if you're a coach that's coming in and you got to win right away, you're going to adjust your team to whatever players you have and run whatever they can run. Frost is clearly not doing that, and that's because he knows he has time to turn the program around. In the meantime, we're all going batshit insane watching some of these games that, you know, like Minnesota, where you kind of penciled it in as a win because their defense, you know, their defense was melted butter. If somebody said Minnesota's defense was melted butter, melted butter would be insulted. That's how bad their defense was. So, you know, watching some of these games, this one, the Illinois game, they're maddening. So that's it for me. I'm ready for recruiting because that's the future. I want to hear about the future. I want to hear good things.
Okay. John, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but speaking of the future, they made a movie a few years back starring Tom Cruise that's called Minority Report. And in it, the precogs are able to tell ahead of time that a murder or that a crime is about to be committed. It's the pre-crime division. I highly encourage you to check it out if you want to know about the future. Meanwhile, in recruiting, this past Wednesday was, I think...
we're sponsoring Tom Cruise, who doesn't even need the fucking money.
I don't know. Did you hear about his blow-up on the Mission Impossible set this past week?
That's because he's Tom Cruise. He's a big star. He has the right to blow up on people.
Well, he's producing a movie, and the crew, I guess, went out and they broke COVID protocol, and so he chewed their ass back when they got to work the next day about, you know, he's like, hey, this is costing us money, and, you know, if we have to shut down, it's going to cost a lot of people their jobs and be more responsible. So I'm not like a Tom Cruise fan. Like, I don't, you know, but, you know, anyway. This past Wednesday, you may or may not have known ahead of time, was the early signing day. And I know it feels weird because, at least for me, I don't remember hearing anything about it until Tuesday when the Slack chat room says, hey, by the way, what's going on with the early signing day? Because we're so used to it being the first Wednesday of February, and here it is, you know, smack dab in the middle of December. And we had great coverage, coordination.com. Check it out if you haven't already. Rick Cohn has been a recruiting writer for a long time, and Aquilo has joined the team, you know, within the last, I think, 2 years ago, maybe?
No, I joined in January.
Oh, well.
Yeah, almost.
All right. It feels like it's been a very long year. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah, 2020, man.
2020 has felt like 18 decades. So, you know, with the early signing day being this past, first of all, I want to commend you. The highlight of it all for me, I know we got a lot of great talent that signed their letters of intent to come play for the University of Nebraska, but the highlight for me was your headline for Thomas Fedone's letter.
Amen. Hey, That's Martin Luther King right there, man.
I mean, I know. It's signed at last. Signed at last. Thank God Almighty, he has signed at last. I guess, you know, that's the one that we all, you know, waited for and had been anticipating for a long time. But let me get your overall thoughts on the day. Was it the, you know, the promising day, the positive day that you anticipated before you went to sleep Tuesday night?
Yeah, basically. Everything went as perfectly as it could go. Like, everybody, all of our recruits that are committed, they were all signed by midday. So, like, it was like pretty much that. I woke up a little late on Wednesday. I woke up at like 8:30.
Oh.
And, like, people started signing at 7 a.m., 6:30. Like, I had to, like, you know, I had to, like, write articles for each signee. So, like, I was, like, a little late. I ended up finishing my articles, writing each one, at, like, around 1:32, maybe. So that was, like, a little hectic for me. But, otherwise, yeah, it went as smoothly as it could go.
Next year, you'll know, wake up at 5 with a pot of coffee.
Yeah, man, yeah. Now I know better.
Although I'm curious to know what at what speed just barely awake Akilo works at, because we all, you know, it's the joke, it's the running joke, and all in good fun. But we all know when Akilo gets fired up, he is talking at a words per minute that that surpasses even the most adept typist. So I'm wondering what, like, slow down, Akilo, sounds like.
Okay, so what stands out to? I don't know anything about these recruits. I've been trying to keep up with everything else, and you're the recruiting guy. Other than Thomas Fidone, I mean, what, number one, that Thomas Fidone is like what, the number one tight end in the nation?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. Other than that guy, I mean, who do you see in this class as being the standout?
The standout? Obviously, you have a Teddy Prochazka, the offensive tackle from Elkhorn South. Really highly rated guy. He's been committed for like 15 months. He was our first commit for the 2021 class. Lots of potential.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I remember hearing that name, you know, like over a year ago. So, and as I was looking at things, you know, it looked like, I'm not trying to derail John's question. I know that's what I'm really good at, but it looks like maybe the coaching staff really tried to hone in on that 500 mile radius. You know, you got to see a lot of Nebraska kids, like, I mean, you know, Eastern Nebraska kids, it is what it is. But then you got some Iowa kids, you know, and you got a California and a Texas and Georgia and things like that. But it seemed like they're really trying to focus on getting the, you know, perhaps the top talent, or at least the top perceived talent in that 500 mile radius.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Prochazka.
Teddy Prochazka, yeah, he's lots of potential. He has a massive frame. He's 6'9", I think 280, 280 pounds. That's gonna be a cornerstone of the pipeline one day. I really like him. As far as when you think of blue chip prospects in a sense, I really like blue chip prospects who signed this class, where Thomas Fidone and Teddy Prochazka. But besides that, like, guys I really like, I expect to contribute early. I really like Sean Hardy. He's a receiver from Southeast Georgia, Kingsland, Georgia. Actually, I have family there, so I kind of know the area. He's really, watch his film, it's amazing. He's playing really good competition, and he's playing really good competition in Southeast Georgia, Northeast Florida. He has impressive size, 6'3", 190. He runs a board at 4.4 40. If you watch his film, he's the definition of a deep threat. He's just catching deep balls all over the place. He's running past safeties. He's making impressive catches. There's nothing you can hate on in his film. Besides him, I also really like Jalen. He's a defensive lineman from Antioch, California. It's in the Bay Area, northeast Oakland, it's the northeast part of the Bay. If you watch his film, he is a freak. He's listed at 6'8", 280 pounds. He runs like a 4.6, 4.7, 40. He is moving crazy at that size. And go ahead.
I was gonna say, Weaver, is he gonna be that end rush that we've been longing for since like the Randy Gregory days?
Nah, man, not two different body types. He's gonna be, no, we're in a 3-4 defensive scheme now. It's gonna be a 3-4 end. Yeah. But yeah, I really like him. Like, yeah, athleticism is dripping everywhere with him. He has hulking physique, hulking frame. I think he's gonna be another like Tuioti Duval special, where you're gonna redshirt him. He's gonna put in time, and he's gonna put in time in the weight room, and then maybe in like a year or two, maybe by like his redshirt sophomore year, we're gonna let him loose on the rest of the Big Ten, like we did with Casey Rogers, and he's gonna be a beast. I really like him.
Casey Rogers.
Let me ask you this about him. In your analysis, you compared him to Deshaun Neal and Rashawn Gary. Now, how can he be both of those things? He's going to be a massive hulking human being. And I mean, Rashawn Gary was a guy who exploded off the ball. And I mean, you can't be both, right? Unless you're Ndamukong Suh. I mean,
No. Basically, I made that comparison to Deshaun Neal and Rashawn Gary was because he has like a similar frame as Deshaun Neal did coming out of Omaha Central High. They're about the same size. I could think Jalen is actually a little taller than Deshaun. They're at the same size. Jalen is heavier at this juncture too. I think Deshaun is like 240 coming out of Central. Jalen is 280 right now. Actually, Deshaun is actually recruited to be a 4-3 end, your typical pass rushing end, when you're running a 4-3 system underneath Bo Pelini and Coach Riley. I also gave him the Rashawn Gary comparison because like they have like a similar like explosion off the line of scrimmage, like they're both like really fast like off the snap. That really impressed me in this film.
We beat out Indiana and Tennessee for him.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. Who else you got? Oh, I like it so far.
Besides Hardy and Weaver. Oh, I really like Gabe Irvin. He's running back from the Atlanta area. He shows us over. I remember at the time his top five was Nebraska, Arizona State, Duke, Michigan State, and there was another team in there. I can't remember. Oh, and Georgia, UGA, Georgia, the Bulldogs. That was really big recruiting coup for us. When you look at his athletic profile, his numbers, he's identically similar. He's identical to Trey Bryant. Remember him coming out of St. Louis? He was like a really athletic guy, scoring on touchdowns and stuff. Unfortunately, Trey's career got cut short by knee injuries. They both have to say like similar profile, around 6 feet, 400 pounds. They're both track guys. They're both like on film. They're both really explosive, you know. Gabe, if you look at his film, it's just like 80 yard carry, 50 yard carry, 60 yard carry. He just scoring a lot. He has really long speed, you know. I like about him. He's also a really good runner he's also a really good runner after contact. And I really like him as well.
Gotta get those yak yards, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think this kid that's the eight man player out of Iowa?
Oh, Seth Malcolm. I really like Seth. When he was being recruited, he was being committed. When he was being recruited and he committed, I was kind of like head scratching a little bit. Like, you know, he wasn't that good to me. At first, I was like, man, eight-man football, getting a scholarship, I don't know how this is going to translate. But his film is good. Even though when you take into account his competition, he was a running back on offense. I really like that. He showed good speed on offense. You know, on defense, he actually reminds me a lot of Luke Reimer. Actually, they're both really physical. They're both really good at they're both running sideline to sideline. They both can run with tight ends and wide receivers, you know. I like it about him, and I'm really high on him. Right now he's listed at 205 and six, and he's 6'3" tall, so he's gonna need weight room a little bit. I like him, you know. He just needs a little bit of time for development.
Was he the number one player in Iowa?
No, that was Thomas Fedoni.
Oh, duh. Okay, what else we got here? Henrik Harburg.
Yes, sir.
The guy whose name our website is going to butcher on purpose, just like they've done to Mark Mukerker. Poor kid.
You talking about Michael Moreland?
No, so what do you think of Harburg?
Harburg, he's really good. Actually, you know, it's funny. Him and Matt Masker from the exact same. Carney Catholic out there in Central Nebraska. I really like him. Obviously, he's a developmental piece. He's gonna need to be, you know, he's gonna need some time to work on his throwing technique and all that. But athletically wise, he's everything you can want. I mean, he's 6'5", 190. He runs a 10.9 100 meter dash, which is blazing fast for a guy that size. On film, he has a cannon for an arm. He just needs some help with his technique and accuracy. Besides that, I really like him.
So you know who Seth Green is? Wait a minute, is that right? Is that the kid's name?
Seth Green, like who played Scott from Austin Powers?
No.
Got a Family Guy?
Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. I know him, yeah.
Yeah. Seth Green, 6'4", 225-pound dual-threat quarterback. He comes in on, goal line, inside the 10 plays, and he runs the Wildcat. He's been a guy who has been able to come in certain situations and, play parts on the field where he scores touchdowns. You know what I mean? So there's probably a place for Harburg if you want to mix things up. A guy that big that has a cannon for an arm. I mean, hell, you can do weird things with him that nobody's expecting.
Undoubtedly, I think Harburg will be a great quarterback for us, like just in technical sense. But I'm saying right now, he's just a little raw.
Latrell Neville.
Yep.
Tell me about him.
Latrell Neville. He's a four-star receiver from the Houston area. He played at High Tower High in Missouri City, which is a southwest suburb of Houston. He has the size that you want from like your typical like. Possession, Big Ten receiver. He's 6'4", 190. That's a good frame. Honestly, when I saw his film, when I look for a hero, right, I look at two things. I look at production and I look at film. His film, he was doing like a lot of like reverses and stuff. Screens, other type of stuff. I mean, I liked it, but I mean, from what I want from a receiver, you know, I want more like a traditional like running curl routes, running post routes, you know, type stuff. Just showing off your route tree.
Yeah.
I honestly I don't really see much of that in this film. So I mean, and I wasn't really encouraged by that. His numbers in high school as well, like his stats wise, he wasn't really that good. His numbers weren't really nothing to write home about. But I ended up learning that he had like really like a bad quarterback play in high school. So I mean, you know, you really can't hold that against him. Yeah, I really like him though. Apparently he performed really really well in camp settings against other like top flight cornerbacks as well. And yeah, he's just like your typical Big Ten wide possession wide receiver that you know you just want to go out and get and bring catches. His nickname that I was he did an interview recently. I think it was Brian Christopherson. He had like he calls himself the All-State guy because you're always in good hands with him. yeah, he has really good hands. I already like it about him.
Did you know his Aaron Neville is like his grandfather?
Yeah, I've read that like 100 different times about him.
Okay, nobody else is impressed by that. Fuck you guys.
I get it.
We need more R&B at Coronation.
But I know how.
No.
Fine, screw you, John. I'm
okay,
trying.
What about?
I'm trying to class up the joint.
You talked about this Teddy dude, who's an offensive lineman. What else we got for linemen? Because everybody will say, if we don't have like 15 linemen in this class, it's a shitty class.
Yeah, you know, we got two others. We got Henry Lutowski. He's from Mount Pleasant, Iowa. And we got Branson Yeager. He's from Grantsville, Utah. Henry is the Henry. Man, I really love Henry, man. Like, you know, like, Phil Myers, he's a road grader in every sense of the word, and every sense of the term. He's trying to pancake everyone that's in his way. He's trying to put you on the ground, trying to hump you, other crazy stuff. movement wise,
it's gonna be a 15-year penalty.
I saw some of him work. Movement wise, I saw some of him moving from his coach. He's an amazing block. He's amazing. He moves great for his size. He's lifting 6'7", like 320. He's gonna play guard for us. He's a big boy. He moves really well. I saw like doing blocking drills and all that stuff. I'm really impressed with him. I don't really expect him to play right away, but I think because offensive linemen rather play right away. But down the road, I think he's gonna be really good for us. Branson Yeager, I'm not gonna lie. At the time when he committed, I wasn't really impressed by him. I saw the big frame. He's 6'8", 332 pounds. He's a massive guy. Ranking wise, I wasn't really impressed with him. So when I watched the film, he had a size. He just looked like another offensive tackle. I wasn't really impressed by him. But I've got trust in Greg Austin. Brendan Hymus, he developed Brendan Hymus into an NFL prospect. I think Matt Fournier has made strides since he's been here. Cam Jurgens, bad snaps notwithstanding, he's been a pretty good blocker for us. I trust Greg Austin. I trust his evaluations. So I'm feeling pretty perky about Branson. And those are our O line.
We got a couple of linebackers in as well. And I think you mentioned a couple of them, but one from New Jersey, another one from South Dakota. So again, the kind of 500 mile radius, although depending on what part of South Dakota, might be more than 500 miles. And they're going to be fun names for the announcers and for us in the years to come. Randolph Kapai and Makai Gebayer. I'm probably not saying that right, but that's okay because everybody screws up Mahochko.
it's Bayer. The G is silent.
Fine.
Yeah, I like them, Randolph Kapai. I hate to drag on our recruits, right? But, when he committed in January, I think at junior day, I believe. When I watched his film, at the time he was like a high 4-star linebacker. When I watched his film, I wasn't really impressed with him. He looked okay. He didn't look like crazy to me. I saw his senior film, and man, we're getting a good one, man. The only problem is that he's a little light right now. He's just at 185, but you don't want a 185 pound linebacker. That's tiny. But he's gonna need to warm the weight room a little bit. There was nothing I could hate on in his senior film. He was running with linebackers, and he was running with receivers and tight ends. He was doing really good in coverage. He was moving side on the sideline. He was delivering hits. He was making tackles for losses. He was sacking the quarterback. I just really love this film. Makai Gebayer, he's in the same vein as Randolph. Actually, when I saw this film, I actually really like this film. I actually like Makai. I think he's a really underrated catch for us. Like Randolph, he was doing everything that I wanted to do. He was doing good coverage. He was sacking the quarterback. I think he had like 20 sacks last year, his junior year. That's crazy. He was tackling running back losses. He was giving big hits. And most importantly, I don't think people really pay attention to, but if you watch the film, I was actually showing them a lot of special teams film. He was making tackles on special teams. And that's important because he's probably going to start on special teams here. I really like that in this film.
Now,
and also,
I was going to say, Bayer is listed, from the official, LOI tweets that the Huskers put out. He's listed at 6'2", 220, so he's already about 30, 35 pounds more than Kapai. So, depending on what the coaching staff has, in mind for both of these individuals, it makes you wonder that, Bayer might be having a little bit of a head start. I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say just now before you started talking. Makai, Makai has a size that to play immediately. That's great. He can play immediately. And like I said, he was showing special teams highlights in the title film. Like, that was really good. I like that.
John.
Did we get any running backs?
We already talked about the one from Atlanta area.
Yeah. You can tell how groggy, how much I'm fighting exhaustion this week. We did talk about that. Okay, and Kamonte Grimes?
Yeah, Kamonte Grimes. I really like him. Like, you know, Kamonte, he's from my neck of the woods. He's probably like maybe like an hour away. Naples is on the west coast of Florida. Miami's on the east coast. It's right across the Alligator Valley, I-75. I really like him. You know, he's a really twitched up athlete. He's a big guy. Well, he's not fat right here. He's big for a receiver. He's like 6'2", 205. That's pretty good. When you look at his form, he's a gadget player. He's playing a little quarterback. Playing a little running back. In his film, playing receiver, I really like that he was running the full route tree. He was doing everything I like from a receiver. When we were recruiting him, he was actually down between us and Michigan. Michigan really wanted him as a safety. Michigan compared him to Jabril Peppers, which is pretty high praise, because Jabril is in the NFL right now, playing for the Giants. But he really wanted to play offense. He really liked Coach Frost and company. So he chose Nebraska over Michigan. He wanted to play receiver here. Coach Frost, they envisioned him in a wall deal type role where he's running, where he's getting things out of the backfield. He's catching passes. Probably even returning punts and kicks. You never know. So, I really like Kamonte.
So where did our beloved Huskers end up on, like, in rankings? Because that's, you know, like guys like me that can't remember names are just going to go, yeah, well, we got number 20 and we got 8 4 stars.
Oh, my goodness. I believe we were number 19 in rankings, I believe. I know for a fact we were number 7 in the Big Ten. I believe we were number 19 nationally.
We were 7th in the Big Ten?
Yeah.
And look, I say it every year that Nebraska does so well nationally but is still right kind of in the middle of the Big Ten because the Big Ten recruits so well. You know, you know, you got your perennial programs that you always have to deal with, your Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, you know, there's Wisconsin. I know they had a down year this year, so we kind of forget about them a little bit. But then you've got Iowa, who is, you know, I hate them, but they're consistent. They're consistent shitbags, but I hate them. But they're consistent nonetheless. And then you've got, you know, the upstarts in, you know, Minnesota. Indiana's had a good season. You never, you know, Michigan State, you never know what to expect with them. So the fact that you're 19th nationally and 7th in the Big Ten – just shows that, like, look, I don't get, people will run their mouth all day long about the SEC, but the SEC is touted so highly by the national services because they're owned by ESPN, and they're not that good. Yeah. They're a bunch of overrated shitbags, just like Iowa.
Wow. We could go into that subject further, but I'm not going there right now.
Can we trade Iowa to the SEC for Missouri?
No.
Why not?
Ooh, come on. What the fuck? Are you going to trade one state of dipshits for the state of meth heads? What the fuck? What are you getting out of that trade?
Okay. Hey. Kentucky. Tennessee. I don't know.
No, we could trade him for a Florida school.
Well, there's only one. Isn't there only one Florida school in the SEC?
We get to go down to Florida and play in front of Florida kids and recruit them or something.
Well, let's do that. Let's trade Iowa. Tell you what, let's trade Iowa to the Big 12 for TCU. And then we will trade – now, wait for it. We'll trade Maryland to the SEC or the AC. We'll send them back to the ACC, and we will pick up Miami. Because I think Nebraska-Miami every other year would be a lot of fun.
It would.
So there you go.
I'd be in for that.
All right.
Now, on the other hand, Greg, do you really want to get rid of Iowa when we're just going to – you know, when Frost gets this thing together, it's going to blow up.
Okay.
The offense, 40 points a game, I'm telling you, it's going to happen.
Okay, then we will get rid of – we can't get rid of Illinois because that's like the games that I go to are in Champaign. Minnesota? I feel like that's an awful long commute. Northwestern or Purdue? I'd be all right with getting rid of one of those three.
Where did this come from?
I don't know. I think Nebraska should go independent. And
how old are you now?
Why does that matter?
Because you're acting like a fucking gronky old man.
I'm old enough. I'm old enough to drink this beer and be pissed when I'm out.
You even swigged that like a gronky old man. Hey, Kayla, did you see Ohio State's recruiting class?
Outrageous, man. It's ridiculous.
It's like they signed a whole fucking class full of NFL players.
Well, they did. They're just about 4 years away from it.
Really? Right.
I don't know. Okay, do we have anything else in recruiting? I'm sure we missed people, but I'm sure we'll hear about them in the future.
But it's getting late, and Greg's getting gronky, which means I'm going to catch a touchdown pass, spike it in the end zone, and then go play wrestler for the WWE for a few weeks, and then go back and sign with Tampa Bay. That's being gronky. You're welcome,
everybody.
Should
we go into Rutgers?
Yeah, let's talk briefly about today. Here's the crazy thing. We usually drop the Five Heart Podcast the day before the game. But some bitch, we got to play on a Friday because for some reason the Big Ten Network or Fox or whomever decided to put the conference championship game between Northwestern and an undeserving Ohio State at noon, a noon kickoff. You could have had a whole day of Big Ten games and had a primetime kickoff, but for some reason, I've got to try to get home from work and watch game on a Friday night. That's not how I spend my typical Friday nights. Not real happy about it, but thankfully, Maryland, whomever, some other game canceled, and I can watch it in primetime live. Damn it. So, Rutgers. Let's talk about that.
Rutgers.
We are playing Rutgers. I just want this to sink into everybody listening. In this awkward, messed up year of 2020, Nebraska's end of the season crossover game, which is against an opponent of equal position, is fucking Rutgers.
Amen. Well, yeah, it is.
Amen.
Oh, yeah. I interviewed the Rutgers guy, and you know what the most terrifying thing I heard was?
Noah Vedral's going to kill us?
No. Come on, guess harder. Guess.
Greg Schiano is returning them to the promised land.
Well, we talked somewhat about that, but that wasn't the most terrifying thing.
Akilo, you got any guesses?
I mean, I know Noah Vedral isn't playing tomorrow, so I don't know what it is.
Okay. Rutgers has never won 4 Big Ten games in a season.
Oh, God.
They have 3 wins now. And the way Nebraska has been giving records to everybody on the fucking planet that they play, I looked at the guy and I said, well, fuck, that's it. We're doomed. We're doomed.
And, oh, God. I don't want to be Rutgers for a win, man. Please, I don't want to be Rutgers for a win.
If you think about it right now, Rutgers has a better record than Nebraska.
Well, Rutgers, look at Rutgers. Here's the thing that's interesting about Rutgers. Greg Schiano showed up. They hadn't won. They had a 21-game Big Ten losing streak. I don't know if you guys watched Rutgers football, but every time they showed a picture of Chris Ash, he looked like he was wanted to weep or break down in severe depression. And he literally looked like a man who was stuck in a prison for a crime he didn't fucking commit. And please, God, get him out of there. And then they finally did. And I hope Chris Ash is is doing well. I think he's Texas defensive coordinator. But, you know, Greg Schiano showed up, united the fan base, and has a team that's winning football games in the shittiest year in probably, I don't know, in our lives. He's come in and he's changed himself around and he's figured out how to win games with what he has. You know, he's pulled in some transfers that have been pretty beneficial. Obviously, Noah Vedral is one of them that we're all familiar with. But, you know, he's done a commendable job. And
I really like Rutgers this season. Their offensive line is really tough. They have a really, like, really tough offensive line. They have a running back named Isaiah Pacheco. I really like him. He's a really good runner. Their defense is really tough. They're really gritty. They're really scrappy. Obviously, they're even getting beat by teams more talented than them. But, you know, they fight hard. And they don't go down without a fight. That's kind of scary for Nebraska because our offense turtles up at the sign of any objection from the opposing team. That's kind of scary for us. But Nebraska has more talent than us. It really, tomorrow all comes down to because I really like how our defense has progressed this season. To be honest with you, so I think tomorrow comes down to quarterback play and play calling for Nebraska.
No, I completely agree. I feel like, and I've caught some blowback from this in recent weeks about making critical comments about some of the play call, especially last week, and how some, there was one series where Nebraska did a 3-and-out against Minnesota, and it was just bad play call after bad play call. And I said something on Twitter, and then I got some backlash, but we'll call it friendly feedback, saying that it's still up to the players to blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, okay, but if the coaches aren't putting the players in any positive situation, they're not helping out the kids at all. So I just feel like the play call at times has been mind scratching to mind numbing at times this season. Yeah.
It seems like there's a disconnect between what we think, and obviously I have said this before. I'm not paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to be an offensive coordinator.
You should be.
But sometimes you just look at it and you go, there's a massive disconnect between what you think these guys are going to be able to do against this defense and between what they're – what they're going to do. In other words, what they're capable of and what you want them to do seem to be two very different things. But again, I wonder if sometimes if we're looking at this from you have to win right now because this is pissing me off versus these guys have to learn my offense. And, when we go into the Rutgers game, we're going to have, I think, four offensive linemen starting that game that are freshmen or redshirt sophomores, something like that. Brandon James opted out this week, and the first thing I thought was
who?
Brendan Hymus. I'm sorry. I told you I was fucking exhausted, man. What do you want from me?
All I know is that I'm pretty sure
our left tackle, opted out this week, and my first thought was you couldn't play one more fucking game. I don't know how many games he started for Nebraska, but it's been a shit ton. So you kind of look at this and you go, you couldn't have played one more game with your guys. And then you look at it on the other hand. Well, you know what? Who is it? Turner Cochran is going to start in his place.
Turner Cochran?
Yeah. So that guy's going to get game time as a true freshman?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, this game really doesn't mean that much other than to us because we don't want to be embarrassed by losing to Rutgers. But the fact is that Turner's going to go in there and get some game time when he wouldn't have had it otherwise. So that's a plus. And I guess if, Brendan wanted to opt out to go to the NFL or prepare himself for the NFL, I can see that. It's kind of like saying, it's like some guy being on tour and in a war zone and going, well, shit, all I got is one more week, and being so fucking paranoid about that, all he wants to do is hide under a truck or something. It's a shitty comparison, I know that. But I guess, the best of luck to Mr. Hymus in the draft. But we're going to go into this game with an extremely young team. And they're going to get more, you know, get more game time, get more reps. And that's why Frost wants to obviously get us into a bowl game, is to get more game time and get more reps, which makes sense, you know, regardless of how much we're embarrassed by whatever they're doing. So what else did I want to say? My God, I just want to fall over.
We won't keep you much longer, John. I want to reiterate something, a comment I made last week about the definition of success for Nebraska in 2020, and how the up, you know, you push back the uprights, because it's less about you know, the wins and losses, and more about proving after you know, beating your chest and saying we want to play football, we can do so safely, that you know, you've managed to avoid any, you know, outbreaks on the team, things like that. You know, you haven't had to cancel a game because of your own fault. You know, Wisconsin had their issues, and you know, other teams, other programs, Minnesota certainly had, you know, a couple weeks off. You know, we know about that as well. For Nebraska, it's you know, obviously we want wins. We would have loved to have gone 8-0, 9-0, depending on what the schedule looked like. But realistically, it's, you know, showing to the rest of the Big Ten, showing to the rest of college football, hey, we made a stink about wanting to play. We got to play. We were able to do so safely. What the hell is the matter with everybody else?
Yeah, Rutgers was one of the three teams in the Big Ten that got to play all their games. Yeah. And the one thing that the Rutgers guy did say that was of interest, and you'll note that none of this has to do with the athleticism on either side of the ball at all. It has all to do with the mentality of the players coming into this game. He felt that Rutgers was exhausted, and he wondered really if they were going to be, you know, just burned out by the time this game rolls around. And I guess we're going to see when the game starts. Yoshi talked about the fact that Greg Schiano was his coach at Tampa Bay when Yoshi went to the NFL. And he talked about the fact that Greg Schiano was very detail-oriented, and that one of the things he did, I think, when they started each practice or started each week, was to point out who got the most penalties in games. And that cut down on the penalties, because you don't want your coach calling out for penalties. So I thought those were you guys need to go back and listen to the Yoshi podcast. I think he's fun to interview because he's a really nice guy, and he puts out a lot of knowledge. Okay, I'm about to fall over.
The Yoshi football show does receive a lot of high marks. A friend of the show, Josh, is a big fan of it and says keep it up. It's a great show. So before John ends his night, we need to get predictions for Nebraska, Rutgers, and Akilo. You get to go first.
Oh man! Oh my goodness! Nebraska, Rutgers. I don't want to vote against my boys.
Okay.
It's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to see how I can't.
You do what you have to do. Just know.
Yeah, do what you have to do.
Nobody ever actually actively, even Nate McHugh doesn't actually pick against Nebraska. So, take that.
All right. Okay, I'm going to go 21-17 Huskers.
Okay.
GBR.
All right. John.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still hoping for the big point totals. Toidles. Because I expect the offense to explode at any time. So I'm going to go with 35-21 Nebraska with a double-digit win against them fucking New Jersey sons of bitches.
Well, Nebraska is due for an offensive explosion. However, I'm not entirely sure it's going to happen in the last game with a bunch of young talent. I hope it does. I hope that this, you know, Tanner Corcoran says, you should be playing me all season long, and not this chump over here. My words, not his. I'm going to say Nebraska 28, Rutgers 20.
28-20, okay.
And by the way, let's shout out to Connor Culp for the Big Ten Kicker of the Year. and Cam Taylor Britt for second team All Big Ten. I think he deserved higher. He personally kept Nebraska in that Purdue game, I feel, and ahead in that game, I should say, and has had a terrific year, and I hope he comes back next year. I think he's Akilah. You know, is he only a sophomore?
Connor Cole?
Yeah. Cam Taylor Britt.
Oh no, he's a junior actually, but well, this season because it's a free year. Next year he's gonna be a redshirt junior.
Okay, that too. All right. Yeah. We'll see you back next fall, Cam Taylor Britt. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Five Heart Podcast. Nebraska, Rutgers tonight. Check local listings because I honestly don't know what station it's going to be on, and I'm not going to ask one of these guys to tell me. So for Akilah Roberts for joining us, for John Johnston for leading us, I'm Greg Mahochko, reminding you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. John?
Go Big Red!
It's time for Pawpaw to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.